You're listening to A Little Too Quiet, and on today's show, it's all about the passions of our local musicians, particularly two very unique musicians, one who has a new book of poetry out, and the other who has translated his fascination with the assemblage of guitar pedals and guitar amps into a burgeoning side pursuit as an in-demand graphic artist. And this is the Ferndale Library podcast, brought to you by the friends of the Ferndale Library. It's called A Little Too Quiet. And today, the esteemed and award-winning singer-songwriter of the rock and folk realms, Carolyn Stria, will be talking to us about Detroit Maiden Energy, her collection of poems that just came out recently. And then Scotty Iulinelli will be here. He's the sales manager of Vintage Kings Pro Audio Outfitting Eastern Region right here in Ferndale, Michigan. But he'll be talking about his analog prints, artwork, and apparel. Thanks for tuning in to this podcast. All right. Carolyn Stria, award-winning Detroit-based composer and poet, is here. A veteran of Detroit's music scene and a mystic weaver of folk and rock and other powerfully evocative energies in her songs and through her stage performances. We're here to talk about her first book of poetry, part one of a retrospective, and it's called Detroit Maiden Energy. Carolyn, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, Jeff.
Thanks for coming, and congrats on getting the book out.
Thank you. I'm really happy it's out.
Yeah. I imagine that must have been a really fulfilling and fun process, but also probably challenging, too. That's a big deal to get a book together.
It's a lot. There's so much, too. I found more. So, mm-hmm. And when I was working on it originally, I was going to do a memoir, you know, and I started that. So mm-hmm. I have like 100 pages written of that, mm-hmm. which is very low because there's a lot more. But at some point, I just thought, well, you know what? I wanted to do poetry and put that in there too, which would be really long. So I thought, since I could maybe pull the poetry together the way I wanted more than a memoir, which needs a lot of work and time and energy.
Well, sure.
Yeah. So anyway, I found some things. I found a lot. But I started going through it and getting an idea of how it could be like a poetry memoir to some extent. I mean, it's not everything, but.
Knowing you and knowing your music, though, if I imagine if you were to write a memoir, it feels right that it would be poems.
It's strange in that way, because when I do an event and I read it aloud, that people like, you know, they buy it and they think it's cool, but when they hear it, it's like, oh my gosh, it's mm-hmm. almost like, and I'm not singing it, you know,
right.
I'm speaking it, but it comes to life so much more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about, so folks will know you're a musician and singer. What came first, music and singing, or writing and poetry, or were they the same time, maybe?
Probably kind of the same time, but there mm-hmm. was music because I was already like making up little songs and things, which mm-hmm. my parents said, wait, there's something going on. I better get piano lessons, you know, how moms and dads do.
Yeah.
We're like, okay. I wasn't one of those haters of piano lessons. You know, some people just hate them.
I think it's 75% of the musicians I talk to, 75% hated it.
Yeah.
Hated it.
I didn't really hate it because I wanted to learn and I liked playing. But then I, you know, later, of course, I was like, I can't do this. You know, it's so stringent.
Yeah.
With writing. So it's part of communicating because I was so shy. And looking back, I didn't realize I was that shy, but I was super shy. So being able to write like a diary and journal and tell stories about, you know, I was growing up in Detroit and I still have some of them. And mm-hmm. it's hilarious when you read back what you wrote when you were 10 or 8.
But it gives you a volume you might not get as a shy person. On that page, it has volume.
It does. Yeah. And that was part of when I started to get into music, like just thinking this is freeing. This mm-hmm. freed me up from that icky feeling mm-hmm, mm-hmm. of introversion.
Introverted people tend to wind up at libraries. Did you visit libraries often in your youth?
Yes, I couldn't. That is like one of the best questions because, I nobody's asked me that. And we were obsessed. We were so into our library, which was in Detroit, and mm-hmm. it was called the Redford Library.
Okay.
And so, we went all the time. My mom took us all the time, and I always had that library card, and we just checked out stacks of books.
Yeah.
We were obsessed. We were the biggest readers.
Yeah.
Still are. So.
Yeah, well, of course.
Of course.
Well, I mean, I presume it, anyone who has the written word so involved in their life as you, I have to imagine the library was a big influence. So.
Yeah, yeah, it really was. It was huge, and I still go to libraries all the time. Mm-hmm. I do, yeah.
Any vivid memories of visits or just things you liked most about being there?
Just being in there, it was just like almost exciting. Like it was another mm-hmm. home that we had. It was this old brick building. It was beautiful. It was ivy colored. And sometimes grandma would come too. And my mom would take me and my sister. Mm-hmm. And she was, you know, she had broken English. She didn't know English that well. So she loved going too, my grandma. So, yeah, we bought books, but mostly we checked them out. Mm-hmm. That was the big thing back then.
Mm-hmm. So libraries and books, formative for your writing side. What about formative for your music side? Now, being shy and maybe hard to communicate, becoming a lyricist and a musician is a whole other thing. You have to perform. That can be nerve-wracking.
Yeah, but, you know, for some reason, I never was really nervous about performing. Yeah, I remember being in school and doing, like, little lip-syncing back mm-hmm. then. I just thought of that. And people loved it, you mm-hmm. know, doing these little songs and, yeah, like musical-type stuff. And I wasn't really a theater person, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? But there was a few things I did, and then the rock and roll was there. So when I saw that, it was like, okay, you know, people that influenced me. But I felt like nobody was going to tell me what to do. Like I didn't walk around saying that, but I thought, I am going to do this. I'm going to be a singer in a band. I thought I would be the first girl baseball player, you know, professional. You know, those kind of things where my parents were always, like, pushing us like we were, you know, we could do it. Mm-hmm. So that was a lot of encouragement. You know? Mm-hmm. Although, you know, once I got in the band, they were probably like, because I remember sort of, we were playing out a lot. I was 16, 17, and running around at night and going to high school, but it was important to me. It was like really something. And I tell the students I teach now, you have to find something you love. Mm-hmm. And they're having such a hard time finding mm-hmm. something they love, mm-hmm. you know, that they're going to want to do.
Well, there's so much out there for them to love.
I know.
Remember when we could just go to a record store and touch a piece of vinyl and take that home and open up and look at, you know, liner notes.
And delve into lyrics and read them and read them and listen and that was just a whole nother thing. They don't do that.
It sounds like that was one of your formative moments, just listening to the music.
Big time.
Yeah.
Yeah, what you just said.
Yeah, and that, like, the rock and roll energy leads you to dream big.
Well, it made you feel like you could do something.
Yeah.
You know, this just like you're saying, it made you feel that creative feeling instead of, you know, just what's wrong with me feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, that awkward feeling when you're young and every, you know, you're the tallest person, you know you're tall before everybody else or something, you know, or you have braces or, you know, and suddenly you can go up there and do something. Mm-hmm. So it meant a lot to be able to start a band.
I mean, when you're on stage, there's so much energy and you just look so natural. I hate to keep going back to how you used to be shy, but
I am still. I am. It's very bizarre, and that I teach too now. So yeah, you know, in front of students.
It's interesting.
It is. I've only taught for 10 years. You know, a lot of people have been there for decades.
Yeah.
You know? And I started later, but yeah, the kids. So I know totally what they're going through.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But in the music world, you have to play with others, you have to collaborate with others, you have to write songs with others.
And they get so shy.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I found a group of people, and I kept finding people that wanted to do the same thing I did. I guess, I don't know, it's a little harder now in a way.
Yeah.
Spread out more.
Sure.
But
sure.
Yeah, I always seem to, I said, you got to find your people somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this book.
Okay.
Let's start with the title and what inspired that.
Oh, all right. That's another story. So I had two titles. I really had one at first. Well, I didn't have one. I had titles of poems, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the publisher, Aquarius Press in Detroit, she, Heather Buchanan, was really loving Detroit Street Princess. And Detroit Street Princess, when I heard her say that, and here it is, I see it, I was kind of, no, and that's not what I saw.
Mm.
But yet it made sense. So we were all about that title for a while. And then I started running it around a little with people. And the thing that hit me was the word street. I wasn't sure if that was, because it is. It is very, there's a lot about the streets in here. But with the word princess, I wasn't sure if it had the right connotation for what I was trying to do. So we went back and forth. And I came up with the other, there's another poem, Maiden Energy, in mm-hmm. here. And that's a song. That was a song that we recorded way long ago. So I thought, can't we do a compromise and still have the princess feeling with a maiden, you know, because it's mm-hmm. M-A-I-D-E-N, maiden, young maiden. Mm-hmm. And the energy she has, that would be the street. Kind of, and she said she liked the name, but it's mm-hmm. just she was so stuck on princess, which I get because it does have like a vibe, mm-hmm. Detroit Street Princess. But everybody really likes them titles, so I'm happy with it, mm-hmm. and she is too.
Yeah, no, I like Maiden Energy.
Yeah,
yeah.
Thank you.
So this is officially your first book,
right?
But I have to imagine these poems and lyrics have been piling up for years and years.
Just like you asked, yeah. They have been, and there's a whole bunch more. And I didn't know how long, like, it seems short to me, but when I read at, you know, events, it is, there's a lot in here for the, you know, it seemed like, okay, because I have so much more. And all the lyrics I've ever written and sang and put out, they're not in here. And a lot of the poems aren't, but a lot are. So yeah. It's kind of like I met it halfway in some respects, although I'm sure there's still...
Poetry's unique, though, because it's like each poem is a chapter.
It is, sometimes... very much, and if you read it that way, like, you know, take it that way.
Yeah.
You don't have to rush through it because you can't really, right. If you really want to read it. I wanted pictures. You know, I have a big history in music and mm-hmm. met a lot of people and played with a lot of well-known people. And I had the vintage posters and things like that. But again, you know, time and all that good stuff, mm-hmm. content. Mm-hmm. Maybe someday.
Yeah. Oh, and I asked sort of at the beginning, but what was curating it like for you? Was it hard? Was mm-hmm. it easy? Was it fulfilling? Was it challenging?
It was hard. Yeah. We didn't change it too much from what I had, mm-hmm. which was kind of neat. She, you know, I kind of what I put together is what she took, except I added a lot. I wrote some more recent ones at the end. Mm-hmm. And then when it was time to find, like, I wanted more in here, it was like, okay, we got to get this out or we're not going to get it out. Mm-hmm. So I stopped. Okay, mm-hmm. Stop bothering you with how many emails did I send? Phone calls, because, you know, you see stuff. You see, okay, the book could be hardcover with this going on and these, and then a little bit more prose and more story. No. Right? Well,
And I had told you earlier that I find your, when I'm reading your poems, it's very intense and kind of intimate, mm-hmm. you know. And the experience for me, and maybe you can also tell us later about any other feedback you've gotten, but specifically for me, when I read your poems, I feel like I'm kind of in the room with you. And it varies. Either I feel like I'm right over your shoulder as you're writing, or you're sort of reading it right to me. And I could talk about what the creative process is for you as a poet, and if you're aware of that reader, and if you are trying to really go to one person sometimes, and what that's
yeah,
like.
Yeah, that's really, you've got this. It's true that I think that I'm trying to tell somebody specifically something, mm-hmm. but it might be myself when I was little sometimes, mm-hmm. which is kind of weird, I guess, but it is. It's like you don't know you're doing that. So when I write, it's like sometimes I just have to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, you've heard that probably, where somebody sure. feels that they have to do it.
Sure.
So it. I've been writing so long that I think I just, it's part of what I do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's the whole thing, is I feel like time is fluid inside the microcosm of one of your poems. You could talk to yourself contemporary mm-hmm. in the first stanza, and you might call back to yourself in the past.
Okay.
And the,
that. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's quite a feat. Yeah. You know, when you're doing it, though, when you're writing a poem, a lot of these, when they were written, just were written.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It wasn't like you're going to revise it and make mm-hmm. it all scholarly or perfect or anything. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think it does that.
Yeah.
What you just said is that yeah. it's not trying to make, you know, I'm so perfect or this is the best poem in the world. It's just, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The intimacy, what you said.
Yeah.
It's true. That's about what I'm feeling then.
I mean, you're getting this book together. Take us back to October, September of last year, when it isn't quite out yet. You know, were you thinking about what you really wanted readers to take away? Did that enter your mind? And did you get some feedback after you'd done some readings?
Right, and I did. And people were pretty happy with what they heard. Mm-hmm. So it would make them go buy the book. So either something resonated with them. You know, mm-hmm. I was kind of actually surprised at... Same with the reviews and things, that people seem to like it that much. I mean, I figured they might like it a little, but I was not prepared for them to like it this much, because I didn't know, you know, it's you writing. It's
yeah.
like, and then you don't know what people are going to interpret, how they're going to take it, if they get it, or maybe there's a certain one that you didn't think anybody would, like Gracious Spoke is in here. It's like, even the title, it's kind of odd. And I had people email me about that one, you know, or Gift Wrapped and Cool, which was a song towards the end. But just when somebody, oh, and then at BookBeat, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Carrie was saying how he wants to read more memoirish stuff, like more after poetry than some more prose.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were talking about that, because I'd like to do that. And that was my original idea, mm-hmm. to do the memoir.
Mm-hmm.
And I had known Josh Malerman, and I had met up with him and talked to him about, you know, writing. And he said, oh my God, a memoir. Oh, I can't imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, here's me thinking, oh, you know, I'll just write some stuff. Next thing you know, I'm in this delve of mm-hmm. this club somewhere, and we're playing, you know, and there's so much going on, and it's, each story is so much.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you, yeah, you need a good editor.
Yeah.
And about lots of time, like
yeah.
hours and years of time.
Yeah. How about influences, though? I mean, you must have shared plenty of interviews over your time where you're talking about your singer influences and musical influences. Do you have poet influences? Do you have writer influences?
Right. I was thinking about that because, you know, I was thinking about the Beatnik poets. I was
yeah.
thinking about, you know, and I met Allen Ginsberg, and I met William Burroughs. I remember that.
That must be intense.
It was, yeah. He was at the DIA, and I met Allen Ginsberg. There was somebody else I was going to talk about, but just those poets were so bigger than life.
Yeah.
But yeah, like Emily Dickinson, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Diane DePrima, I liked
yeah.
her poetry. And there were so many other, you know, popular, like the ones you'd know, like Dylan Thomas, of course,
mm-hmm.
and people that really spoke.
There's a couple other poets out there with like a rock and roll energy, like Jim Carroll or...
Jim Carroll, I met
yeah.
him too. Yes,
oh, wow.
Jim Carroll's amazing.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, he had passed away, and
yeah.
he was. I saw him live, and you know, with Patti Smith, I think. Yeah, he was amazing. Basketball Diaries, I met him, and I read all the poetry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't like, oh, I met this poet.
Right, right.
I mean, these are people that I've really admired. So it was, yeah. I guess I was. Meeting musicians and poets.
Poets are a whole different kind of celebrity. It's not like you're saying you met a movie star, you know?
I know. And
they're a person of letters, you know?
Right. And as a young girl, there were... Oh, and Sylvia Plath. That was when I was a teenager.
Oh, yeah.
But I loved Sylvia Plath.
Mm-hmm.
She just laid her soul out there, you know? And there was the Irish poets, and there was William Blake and William Butler Yeats. And there's just so many. And then, of course, The Wasteland. And
of course.
Of course.
Yeah. How about here we are, still early in the year, future plans, things you're looking ahead to?
You know, I meant to say Jack Kerouac, too, because I
was oh, yeah.
thinking about him. There's some things I'm working on. Part of it is writing. You
yeah.
know, part of it is still leaning towards the other book. You
mm-hmm.
know, I don't know how soon that would happen. But also a new group of songs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's more songs. I didn't even know it. It's like... It's just osmosis.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of cool. So there's more songs. I don't know. And then probably going back to Isle of Wight to play again.
Cool.
In England. Yeah, that's great. I just love it there. So
you say you're not sure when the book could come, but being in the creative process for so long, I'm sure you know that sometimes it might come in a flurry. You never know, right?
Yeah. Oh, and I forgot Langston Hughes. Oh,
Langston Hughes, and, of course.
Oh, Maya Angelou. Oh, just
Maya
going,
Angelou.
Okay, where do I stop?
Yeah, I know.
There are so many great authors and poets.
And they're all here in the library, by the way, I should say.
I know. So I go to the poetry section.
That's
still.
Awesome.
I was reading Bukowski recently.
Great.
And I love Anaïs Nin.
Oh, I'm not familiar.
Oh, yeah.
I'll have to go look up.
You have to check her
yeah.
out. She's mm-hmm. got these diaries and, oh, my God. Anyway. Yeah.
yeah.
There's some amazing people who had written. And I just felt, and of course, Patti Smith. And
mm-hmm.
there was so many influences that it's like, how am I going to put all this... And I guess through years of writing and years of doing music and what I do, I didn't know that I was doing it all along.
Yeah. Yeah. But it happened and it came together.
Right.
Yeah.
Did. Yep. So here I am. So yeah, going back to the memoir, I started looking at it again. I said, what am I doing to myself? This could be crazy. So, because I had vowed to put it away for a while because, you know, having a book out and
yeah.
trying to, you know, go to do some events and move out of up north, I was up there and they took the book at many places. I did some events, which was nice, mm-hmm. you know. Just to get, I mean, they you go up to, I didn't expect this. I was, for some reason, my car kept going, and I was up at Leela now. Seriously, I didn't plan it. And they had a bunch of Detroit books there.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Great.
Like, it's a children's play, and they have all these, like, mm-hmm. Stroh's book about her life mm-hmm. and just Jim Harrison and all kinds of stuff. So they took the book, too, and I don't know. It's been fun.
I mean, that's a whole other energy to draw from. It's just the legacy of Detroit and everything that's happened here.
It really is. Yeah. So that's what I'm trying to, I want to go over to Canada, yeah. up to Toronto, and then, of course, the book will be in the UK.
Great.
And who knows where else.
Great. Well, thanks for being here, Carolyn.
You're welcome.
It's been terrific.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
Yeah. To find out more about Carolyn's poetry and her music, visit carolynstriho.com. We'll be linking to that in the show notes, and you can search for Detroit Made in Energy on Amazon and online through Aquarius Press. Thanks again, Carolyn.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
Joining us now is Scotty Iolanelli. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
I'm really glad you're here because you can do a better job of telling me about everything that you do because you work at Vintage King Audio.
Yep.
Yeah.
I've been there for going on 10 years.
Okay.
You know, it's a local business here that does, that basically serves the world as far as high-end pro audio equipment goes. And yeah, I started off in the shipping and receiving spot just to kind of get my foot in the door. Started managing that department, and then they got into pedals, mm-hmm. which, you know, if you know me, I'm big into that stuff.
We'll be getting to that.
Yeah. And from there, they said, hey, can you sell this stuff? I said, yeah, I did it for years before I came here. So yeah, from there, I just started selling that stuff. And then they're like, oh, wow, you sold some nice studio stuff. I said, oh, yeah, I went to school for this. So they're like, oh, well, do you want to do that too? So I said, sure. So mm-hmm. then I did sales for about four or five years, and now I'm on doing sales management. So I have a team of like 9 different sales reps.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. It's a cool company to work for, especially to have it right here in this town.
So I know. It's kind of insane. We're outfitting the world, and it's based right here in Ferndale.
Absolutely.
I mean, there are many, many little HQs of Vintage King across the country, I presume. So
just here's the headquarters, though. We have the main tech shop here. All the nerds with soldering irons and stuff are here working on that stuff. There's also a admin building that you're probably familiar with. And then from there, there's a, you know, warehouse. But then there's a Nashville shop and a LA shop, and that's it.
Let's talk about being a nerd with a soldering iron.
All right.
Were you one and are you one?
Yeah, so.
So your love of guitar pedals goes back a ways.
Yeah, when you're into like stuff like that and you don't have a lot of money, you kind of get used to fixing stuff. So that's kind of where my expertise starts, is like, oh, okay, this is broken and somebody's going to give it to me. Well, let's see what makes it tick and go in there and start working on it.
Right. Because if your toaster starts to break, it just stops giving you toasted bread, but your pedal can break, but you as a player can keep playing it and it sounds weird. Right.
Right. Yeah. You might make it better, or like, you know, a toaster plugs into the wall. So uh-huh. like, I don't want to tinker with that. Ice. Pedal runs on a battery. I've licked a battery. I can handle that.
Okay, well, there you go. You're a guitarist in a band called Bars of Gold.
Yep.
I'm not even sure if I can call you the lead guitarist because there's 4 guitarists.
Right, yeah.
But I want to. But, you know, this band was started lifelong friends, and yep. You and Ben Audet is another player, and I considered you guys the lead guitarists, but now there's 4 guitarists.
Yeah, yeah, and Ben and I, you know, it's nice we added John to the band, so he's our newest guitar player. Mm-hmm. But he also has history with Brandon, our drummer, and Mark, our singer, mm-hmm. from Bear vs. Shark, and he kind of came from the same soil as us out in, you know, north of here in, like, Highland. Actually, one of the closest neighbors of mine mm-hmm. out in Highland. So, you know, for some reason, even though I haven't really played with him until now, it just makes sense and works and you know, fits right into the band, no problem. Mm-hmm. Which you'd think it would get complicated, but it somehow hasn't. It's gotten easier.
That's great. Tell me more about pedals. When you,
sure.
When you, I mean, everyone remembers when they got their first guitar, but getting your first guitar pedal must have been something.
Yeah. I remember my dad was like an avid pawn shop kind of guy, you know. Okay. And he came home with some weird multi-effect pedal. It was actually for bass, but he didn't know. And bass players kind of get the short end of the stick for a long time. Mm-hmm. Until recently, they would just have like maybe an overdrive pedal, chorus, mm-hmm. and a limiter. Like some of the least fun things, you know. So I kind of was like...
Limiter sounds not fun.
Exactly. It's mm-hmm. right. limiting your
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, I kind of messed with that for a little bit, and then I kind of, but I knew there was more, you know, wow, I can make my guitar sound like something else, and that's like what I've fallen in love with. The more I can make my guitar not sound like a guitar, the more fun I'm usually having.
Mm-hmm. You're a Stooges fan.
Oh yeah.
And that brings in the fuzz pedal.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah, I'm a big fuzz fan, and there's so many variations, you know, and they all based on different, you know, germanium, silicon transistors, and then like, you know, how they're stacked and different EQs into them and stuff like that. I could go, I don't know how deep you want to go, but I could probably.
I liken it to the mystery of how even a lightsaber works. That's where I am with guitar pedals. I just Googled, or I started typing into my Google search guitar pedals.
Yeah.
And the first two suggestions was explained and 101, because
all right, okay, yeah,
guitar pedals are a mystery.
It's been so long since it's been a mystery to me that I think that I can't even imagine what that's like.
Jedi Master Scotty Iolanelli.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that,
but you've built some.
Yeah. Once I got into it, and you open a few of these like really cool sounding like vintage ones up, you're like, wow, there's only 7 components here plus a switch and, mm-hmm. and a knob, like. Sure, I can do that. And like, you know, this was when Radio Shack was dying, but mm-hmm, around. Mm-hmm. You could go in there and they actually had these drawers, you know, stacked. You've probably been in a Radio Shack a million times. I don't know how often people even notice these things, but you open them up and there would be components in there and most of the ones that you need. And two, like, you know, I'd collect broken, you know, like I said, people are giving me broken things mm-hmm. all the time just because they know I like tinkering. And I'd pull parts out of those, like mm-hmm. germanium transistors, and I'd put them in these fuzz pedals and kind of, you know, generate my own sound. I was usually just ripping somebody else's circuit off, you know, from the internet. But at the end of the day, you know, a few happy accidents in there and you have something totally new. So
yeah.
I think that's like why you see so many, because it's literally like one component can change the whole thing, you know?
Component. Did you say something about silica about 2 minutes ago?
Silicon?
Trans,
yeah, transistors and then germanium. Those are the two, like.
Silicon.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't even know what's going on there. But how old are you when you like break open and work on your first pedal?
Probably like 12.
Wow.
Maybe. Probably as soon as I got a guitar.
Okay.
You know, like, yeah. And the first pedal I ever built, I was living in a house with Ben and actually the whole band, Wildcatting, which you're familiar with mm-hmm. at the time. And I just kind of locked myself up. I'm not a really good, you know, I love the library, but I'm not a really good reader. I'm mm-hmm. dyslexic, so it takes me a long time to get through that stuff. But just like looking at those maps in the books and understanding the signal flow and stuff like that was really a new thing to me to look at like kind of a new language and understand it kind of right away. And so what I did was I understood that, you know, I learned how to build this one circuit off of this chip that they sold at Radio Shack called like a 555 chip timer or something mm-hmm. like that. And what you could do is make a light blink off of that. And once I figured that out, it was literally on the back of the box. It said, this is how you make the light blink. So I said, okay, well, there's another component called a photocell. And that, when the light's hitting that, it completes the circuit. When the light's off, it shuts the circuit off. So I was like, wow, I could make the tremolo, you know, just mm-hmm. using logic, like of what I understand about what it says on the back of this box and what this other device does. If I stick them together, tape them up, and when the light blinks, the sound happens, and when the light goes off, it stops. And I actually made a really cool, like, hard stop tremolo pedal. And if you change the speed of the timer, mm-hmm. it would change the rate of your tremolo. So it's really interesting, because tremolo is kind of one of those effects that, you know, it's, like, built into amps and stuff like that. And some of them are softer mm-hmm. and kind of wobble. Some of them are really hard. And I've always kind of liked that hard one. So when I actually made something that worked, it blew my mind. You know, I jumped out of my seat. I was like, oh, just, you know, open the door. Hey, band, yeah, I made this thing. It worked. And then I thought I was like, you know, some electrical god. But I kind of sucked after that. But,
right.
Yeah, I went for it after that. You know?
But you sort of found a way to what you found is like your own like lexicon here, your own sort of way of communication inside this little box. You know, if books weren't your thing, you could see a visual way to communicate with these components.
Yeah.
That kind of leads me into what became your next adventure, which started about 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Tell us about Analog Prince.
All right.
So. And I'm not saying Prince, P-R-I-N-T-S.
Yeah.
Analog Prince. Graphic design.
Yeah. So that was something that I started doing about, like you said, about 2 years ago. I was in sales full time at Vintage King. There's a lot of ways this story goes. It's very cosmic and coincidental. So I'll just kind of pick whatever route falls out of my mouth. And
love it.
We'll go that route. So
sure.
I made a bunch of shirts for some of my clients. You know, I'm usually drawing a lot in sales meetings and stuff like that. It's kind of an easier way to understand signal flow. So I always draw the gear and I'll.
You're drawing the insides.
Sometimes the insides, sometimes the outsides. Whatever. Yeah. The insides are the most.
Basically,
beautiful.
If you have an image of what C-3PO's stomach looks like, that's what you were drawing. All that stuff and how it connects.
Yeah, you actually picked one of those Fairchild prints up.
So. Yeah.
And that's actually what I drew. I drew that same picture, one of those segments. I did this picture that Jeff picked up. It had, at the DIY street fair, it had four versions of the same piece of gear. One with the face off so you could see the guts, one with it on, one with it open, and one with the whole beauty plate sealed and stuff like that. So I drew one of those versions. I put it on a shirt, and I mailed them out to all my favorite customers. A lot of them, you know, had never seen anything like it on a shirt, and they were all kind of asking me for more. And I really didn't have much time or interest in doing it. I had an extra one on my desk. I gave it to this rep. He wore it to his company, Universal Audio, and the marketing person said, "Hey, who did that? Can they do some more for us?" So I did some more. I posted a picture of that shirt online, said, "Hey, I did this thing. If you get one, good for you. I don't know how to buy one." And people were asking me how they could buy one. I said, "I don't know." So I made a microphone one right after that. I said,
"Hey,
if I made this, would you guys be interested?" And I sold all 25, like, I think in a day. I found in the Instagram, like, unread messages, little hidden section. There was, like, more than I had. So I had to go home and try to figure out how, if I do this again, how can I make it? So I don't oversell. So I made a website, and it just tumbled into this thing that I've been doing. I make music videos. Now I do things that I never in my life thought I'd do at this
That's
stage.
Right. Correct me if I've got the parlance wrong. You're creating memes or something. What are you working on in the social media department here?
So, again, I don't stop. Jeff's already gone over like three or four different things I've done. So right now I'm doing like gift packs, on Instagram in the stories, like, you can post a picture and have these little kind of animated, real short animated GIFs on it. I started doing those for Analog Prints and also a few other companies like Earthquake or Device, that Beyond Juice, local company that does juice. They asked me to do them, which is pretty cool. So, they're just like little 10, 20 frame animations, and then they kind of go away. It's a lot less taxing on me than doing a 3.5 minute music video, which is what I thought made sense. I still am doing those, but the time it takes to do that is crazy.
This is for people like me who have no idea what guitar pedals do, but love what they do and see how they work. And that is sort of what you're doing with Analog Prints. You're opening them up.
Right. Yeah. In a way. Kind of like a tutorial, or at least like a sneak peek. And like you said, like, you Google something like pedals and it's going to obviously you're not the only one to say, like, what's going on in there. And I think it's a lot, it's part of my universe. But if I were to zoom out, I'd probably, it would just be like, model car collecting or something for somebody else, except for you don't really play with model cars. You just kind of make them and you'd be done. Pedals, you can kind of make them and then they can live on. You can share them. It's more of a physical thing. I don't know.
I can't help but think of Back to the Future for a couple of reasons. A, because I know how much you love that movie.
It's my favorite movie.
But B, anyone who's seen the time machine in Back to the Future knows that there is a flux capacitor and no one has to know what that does, but it's a fascinating visual component of that car.
Absolutely.
And I just imagine 6 or 7 year old Scotty watching that movie and wondering what a flux capacitor is and just sort of translating that into his world of guitar pedals.
Yeah, it's almost like it's funny you said that.
So instead of building a time machine, here you are.
Yeah. That's what's interesting about pedals in general. Like, my first two pedals that, like, I really, that really sent me, like, okay. So after I had that multi-effect, I kind of figured that out. My 1 year, my mom and dad and my aunt were like, "What do you want?" And I was like, "Oh, I think I want some more of these guitar pedals," So then they got me one that was a delay pedal and one that was a pitch pedal. I found those to be the most time bending, literally. I mean, if you can change pitch, that happens naturally when something passes by, and there's, you hear the sirens.
We mentioned
changes pitch. That's the Doppler effect.
We mentioned Stooges. We also have to mention MC5. Scotty is a fan of what you would call psychedelic music.
Yeah, the Mo Motor City, and I love psychedelic music, that's for sure. But and you know, anything that kind of stretches and,
yeah,
and bends and things like that, and that all influenced our, you know, the band Wildcatting that I was in with Ben and
yeah,
and those guys. So and again, it's the ability to manipulate time. I can play something now and it can keep going. That's pretty interesting, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can make it go up, or I don't need to know how to play it up. I'll just bend it up with this pedal. I also have limitations as a guitar player, a lot of them, and pedals are like a way that I could either make or buy a little extra, you know, still. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And yeah, folks, he's being modest. He has no limitations as a guitarist. I can say that as an objective observer. While we're talking about Detroit late 60s psychedelia, Bob Seger, you're also a big fan.
Huge fan of Bob Seger.
Tell us why you love Bob Seger so much and why he's so important.
Right. So, again, you know, like, I think there's a lot of, like, you know, the Detroit scene would be like the MC5 and
yeah,
Stooges. And I think living further north of here is a little bit more of like a Bob Seger town. You mm-hmm. know, like, it's, you know, he'd play what, Pine Knob, mm-hmm. DT, mm-hmm. whatever it's called now, and sell it out for like a month straight, or probably a year straight if he wanted to. Probably could just play every night for the rest of his existence,
right
and it'd be fine with the whole state of Michigan, because
right,
you know, his stuff covers like punk rock in the early stages, and then, you know, goes into like, yeah, some more like, you know, nostalgic like mm-hmm. stuff. But you know, the guy was so young when he was writing that stuff. That's
right.
What's really weird to me, it's like either my vision of like an experienced man is Bob Seger,
mm-hmm.
or like he just was that prolific to be able to explain things in a way that just is like timeless, you know. And I, whether it's telling a simple story about, you know, his friends going off to war
yeah.
in the early days, or like a more hard to understand story, unless you've experienced it, about just like developing a relationship with somebody and just like remembering that relationship and what it's like to remember it.
So is he our Springsteen? Am I crazy?
Absolutely.
All right. He's our Springsteen.
But better.
All right. But better. All right. let's note before I let Scotty go, analogprince.net. And I got to say, congrats belatedly in September. You won Best in Show at the DIY Street Festival here.
Best 2D artwork.
Yeah.
I was surprised. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Yeah. So you're just obviously still working on that. Anything else you're looking forward to in the year ahead, either as an artist or a guitar player for your band?
Yeah. We've got a bunch of new songs ready for Bars of Gold. I'm super excited about that. Kind of turning it up a notch.
All right.
We're taking advantage of all the guitars. More analog print stuff all the time. Maybe some less music videos.
Okay.
Fun
yeah.
stuff.
And Just keep having fun with your lexicon, man. Just keep drawing. It's really great stuff.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me. And this is a beautiful thing you guys have here.
Well, thanks so much. Scotty Ulinelli of Vintage King Audio, a worldwide provider of gear and instruments. And we've got quite a team of musicians and nerds with soldering irons working over there right here in Ferndale, Michigan, helping out the biggest names in music, getting them the right stuff. And that's awesome. Thanks so much for being here, Scotty.
Thank you again.
All right. Thanks for listening to this special episode with two unique musicians from the local Detroit arts scene. That was Carolyn Strio at the start, singer-songwriter and poet, author of Detroit Maiden Energy, and Scotty Ulinelli, guitarist of the band Bars of Gold, a key member of the Vintage King Audio team here in town, and the artist behind Analog Prince. You can find out more from him at analogprince.net, and then there's carolynstrio.com. Find more info about Carolyn Strio's book in our show notes. I've been Jeff Milo, joined by our two guests and our producer, Kelly Bennett. This show is brought to you by the Friends of the Ferndale Library. It's a little too quiet, the Ferndale Library Podcast. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if you could. It'll help us find more library-loving listeners, or just tell your friends about it. Share it online. We're enjoying this podcast, and we hope you are too. Thanks for listening.